the book of Hebrews, verse 32, says, "And what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, and of Barak, and of Samson, of Jephthah, of David also, and Samuel, of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weaknesses were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight when the armies of the aliens." Back in, I believe it was 1984, the government commissioned, really had an open audition, if I could put it that way, for a new monument that was to be put in Washington, D.C. It was going to be called the War Memorial, the Veterans Memorial. And it was really started by a nonprofit group, but eventually Congress had put 3 acres into the designated spot, and they started to have what, you know, different layouts that people could send in, and almost like a competition. And every one of the judges voted unanimously for one. It was the one we have now. And boy, I tell you, when it became public what it was going to be, I don't know if you realize this or not, it created such a controversy. They said, there's no statues. There's nothing talking about the soldiers' performance or the war, if it was good, if it was bad. And so there was this bright divide, kind of like we have culture wars today, but it was just about this monument. I don't know if you realize this or not, but that Veterans Monument is now the most visited monument in that area of Washington, D.C. Over 5 million people go there every single year to see that. You know what I think they figured out was, even though there's no quotes, there's no story about the war, there's nothing on the monument except for the names of the fallen soldiers that died in the Vietnam War. Almost 58,000 names are listed there. Just name after name after name. And you know what I think people figured out? Is you can't add anything to that to make it more profound. To see those people that gave their life for our country is a profound statement. You didn't have to add anything to it. We were talking in our house, it was a couple weeks ago maybe, about President Lincoln getting up, following a man that had given a two-hour address after a very important battle of the Civil War. And this man spoke for 2 hours. And then President Lincoln got up as the keynote speaker and gave a two-minute address. And when he sat down, somebody actually asked him, he said, "Is that all? Is that it?" We call it the Gettysburg Address, and it's one of the most profound speeches that any president has ever given. All that to say is, sometimes you don't need a lot of words to have a great impact. You don't have to expound and go on and on and on. And that's really where we find the writer of Hebrews right now. He's about to list off several different names, and then he's going to list off a bunch of things that they did. I don't know, there's like 35 different things that is recorded right there. But he doesn't really expound on any of them. We're going to look at a couple of them tonight, but I want you to understand that by the time the author is getting here, he's given so many of the heroes of the faith to the Jewish nation. He's given them Abraham and Isaac, and he's talking about Jacob and all the things about Joseph. And boy, he's already really gone through the who's who of the faith, Moses. And so now he's just reminding them in rapid fire succession, one after the other, after the other, after the other. Now, I think there's some things we can learn about at least 4 of these men that are listed here. That's probably all we'll get to tonight. But in that, it's just another reminder that God is using these people, not only in their day, but I want you to remember, he's been using them ever since to encourage people. Well, that's an encouragement to me. Last week, I'll be honest, we spent some time kind of looking at the warts and all. We looked at some of the things that maybe these people were infamous for more than famous. And it was just a reminder that God can use people just like you and me, imperfect people. So we may touch on something that we mentioned last week, but really this week I want to think about some of the things that they did do. Verse 32, it says, "And what shall I say more?" The idea that the author is saying is what more can be said? That's really what he's saying. There's not a whole lot more that can be said after I've given you all this information for you to be able to make a choice and choose to walk in faith in following Jesus Christ rather than going back to your old life. There's not anything more I could say. I've already laid out the case. But after he says that, he's still going to give us a handful of names as a reminder that it wasn't just the patriarchs. We'll talk about the list in just a moment. But he said there's nothing more that needs to be said. I love the next phrase even more. "And what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell." Time would fail. You know what he's saying there? I just don't have time. I thought about making that my life's verse. I just don't have time. As a pastor, I feel that clock bearing down on me some Sundays. I just don't have time. This verse, I think, brings every preacher some comfort, knowing that even the writer of Hebrews felt like he did not have time. Now, I've not gotten deep into the authorship. We said the Holy Spirit is the author. But if I were to make a case that the author of Hebrews is not Paul, it would be this verse right here, okay? Because Paul preached so long one time, somebody fell asleep and out the window. Paul said, "Finally, my brethren..." And then he doubled the size of the letter that he was writing, okay? And so Paul goes on and on. But this guy says, "Listen, we only have so much time for me to make my case." Now, I'm joking, you know, but the idea is he's saying, really, I could go on and on and on. It's the same idea as when John said that if I were to write everything that the Lord Jesus did, there's not enough books in this world that could hold it all. That's what he's saying. And so he kind of speeds up the process here. And so will we. And so he says, "And what shall I say? What shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon." Well, who is Gideon? Let's talk about Gideon for just a minute. What did Gideon do? You can find his story in Judges, 6 through 8? Tell me something about Gideon, Sarah. Okay, she said, him and 300 men defeated an army without ever drawing a sword. Let's talk about how he got that army, all right? 300 valiant men, Tammy? Right. Yeah, that's right. He said, let's just take it back one more step, okay? Before he ever fleeced the Lord, what was he doing? When we first see Gideon, do anybody know what he's doing? He was hiding, threshing wheat, right? Why was he hiding? He was afraid of the Midianites. The Midianites had gone and they really raided a lot of their stores. And so now he is, when I say stores, I'm talking about their goods, not like their Walmarts, okay? So they were going to starve, so they had to hide in order to prepare their food, to get things together. And an angel of the Lord comes up. What is the first thing that the angel of the Lord says to Gideon? Anybody know? He calls him a mighty man of valor. This guy is hiding from the enemy by himself. And God says, "Thou mighty man of valor." Now, we'll get to that point. We're going to get back to that. But then let's fast forward and say God gives him direction, but he's still not sure. He's still afraid, and so he does. We call it fleecing God now because of what Gideon did. He said, "Lord, if you really want me to do this, I forget which is first now as well, but I think it was the fleece be wet and the ground. No, I'm sorry. The fleece be wet and the ground be dry. And sure enough, he gets up the next morning and he wrings that thing out. And he said, maybe that was a coincidence. That could have just happened. So I'm going to pray that, Lord, if you really want me to do this, I mean, if you really, really want me to do this, does this sound like a mighty man of valor to you? I mean, if I'm writing a story about a mighty man of valor, I'm not going to have him ask three times, do you really want to use me? Do you really want me to go attack those guys? I mean, like, in my mind, mighty men of valor are yeah, let's go. Let's go kill some Midianites or something. Yeah, a little bit, right? Some excuses there. But he was looking for direction. He didn't seem so mighty at that moment. And so they get a huge army. And then Lord says, that's too many. Why did God say that army was too big? What's that? Say it loud. Yeah, God didn't want them taking credit for what he was going to do, right? And I don't remember the numbers initially. I think it was 32,000 maybe initially. And then he got them all around, and he asked this question. He asked a question, not a question. He said this, if you're afraid, you can go home. They ought to say that to our soldiers today, because you don't want to be fighting next to something, well, that's going to turn tail and run. Now, I'll just say this. Anybody in combat is afraid, okay? But you've got to have courage is not the absence of fear, okay? It's acting in spite of that fear. But he said, if you're afraid, then we want you to go home. And there's about two-thirds of the army that said, yeah, you know, we think that might be a good idea. So what's the next thing that he did? Now, everybody knows about this one. Sarah? Yeah. Which I've never seen anybody do this, but I guess if you're that thirsty, you can get it on all fours. And she said that they drank, I think it was actually out of a river or something, and they came to that river, and if they got on all fours and drank like a dog and just put their head under the water, then they're out. So I don't know. I mean, Gideon's like, no, you go home. No, you get to sit over there. And maybe they didn't even know what was going on. Maybe he was begging them, no, use your hand. You know, I don't know what was going on with Gideon. But when they were done, somebody said how many earlier, how many were left after that 10,000? 300. Now, I'm not good with numbers, but I think there was 135,000, 135,000 Midianites trained soldiers armed for war against 300. And so God gives them direction. I mean, I think about some of the direction that God has given his people to go and attack the enemy. I mean, you have a pitcher, you have a lantern, you break the pitcher and hold the lantern up, and you're going to yell, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. Does that sound like a good battle plan to you? Who wants to be a part of that? I don't want to be a part of that battle plan unless I have confidence that God is the one sending me. I don't want to be marching around a city six times and on the seventh day do it seven times. Okay, that's not my idea of a good battle plan, but that was what God had given. If I were writing the story, I probably wouldn't use the gospel to reach the world. But that's God's plan. That's what he's given us. And just the same as he empowers Gideon to be able to do what he has called him to do, the same as he empowered Joshua to do what he called him to do, he empowers us to do what he has called us to do. You know what I learned from Gideon? I learned this, that God sees potential, not where we are, but where we can be. And then he empowers us to do that. God sees your potential, not just where you are today. Aren't you glad that God sees how he can use you? He gives you direction. He's given you the power, the Holy Spirit of God, to accomplish his will in your life, just the same as Gideon. Gideon, after he was sure he knew what God wanted, did he become a mighty man of valor? Yeah, he did. He led those men. holding a pitcher and a candle. I'm just saying that is a battle plan that only God could draw up, and it would only win because God drew it up. But he trusted God. He did that despite the overwhelming odds. And now we have the perspective to look back and say, oh yeah, Gideon's going to win the whole time. Gideon didn't know he's going to win the whole time. He knew God told him to do that, and that's what he did. God grew him and used him. And sometimes we look at ourselves in the mirror and we say, listen, I'm not much use to God. And maybe we're not where we're at. Maybe there's some things we need to get right. Maybe we need to take a step of faith and start trusting him in some areas. But I'm thankful that God sees the end from the beginning. He knows how he can use you, and then he knows what his will for your life is, and he can bring all that to pass when we live like Gideon by faith. It just doesn't make sense sometimes for somebody to say, you know what, I'm quitting my job, I'm going to go to Bible college, unless God sends you there. It doesn't make sense does not outwardly appear like God's will for people's lives makes sense. I've learned this a long time ago. I tell people when they come and say, do you think I should do this or this? My first reaction is to tell them I'm not the Holy Spirit of God. I don't mind talking through it. I don't mind walking people down, but it's not my job to tell them how to live the rest of their life, other than to say this is God's principles that he's given us. But I'm glad that he sees in us sometimes things that we don't see in ourselves. Gideon, thou mighty man of valor, hiding in a field. But I'm going to use you if you'll let me. Are you willing to let God use you? You say, little old me? He wants to. Then he says of Samson. Oh, let's talk about Samson. I grew up not in a Christian home, but I had Bible stories, had the old picture Bible with Samson, hulking Samson, beating everybody up all the time. That's a great story when you're a kid and you don't know anything else about the Bible. I remember one of the first times that I ever heard Samson preached on, and he was made out to be a bad guy. I thought, who is this joker preaching to me right now? This is Samson. And I remember the next time I heard Samson preached on, it wasn't any better for Samson. And I remember going and reading the story and learning that Samson is not a great example for the believer. One of the first messages I preached up in West Virginia was a hard-headed Hebrew Hercules. He was so strong, but yet he was morally weak. So he showed his strength, and we don't have time to rehearse everything that he did, but you understand, he had long hair, he was a Nazarite vow. Can I tell you, I don't believe it was his hair that gave him the strength. It was his dedication to the Nazarite vow, which was to God, and part of that was his hair. That's the way I look at it. It was not, and so as he gave away that thing and his hair was cut, he really, especially the person that he told, he was circumventing his relationship with God. So anyways, you can disagree with me on that, but if you want to say that it was physically the hair, I understand. That's certainly the way the Bible paints it out to be. But however you look at it, some preacher said this, he should have listened to that old children's song, "Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see." Because whatever he saw, he wanted. He saw a woman down. He sent his mom and daddy to go get her. Then he saw Delilah and had to have her. I mean, he just pursued whatever his flesh desired. So you say, how in the world would he end up in that list? You know, that list is interesting because it's not in chronological order. Those men did not serve in that order. But that's not really what's amazing. What's amazing are the people that's on that list. So I'm talking about Gideon, talking about Samson, Barak. People that didn't have notoriety. Let me tell you what I learned from Samson. You know the story of Samson. What's the last thing that he does? Sarah? He prayed. Don't quote me on this, but I think that might be the first prayer that he prays in the entire story of his life right there. That's recorded. Maybe there's another one, but if you're talking about, if you say I thirst or I'm thirsty, if that's a prayer, then maybe it sounds more like complaining to me when God gives him the water. But he prays and God gives him the strength, even though his hair's not grown back, to be able to push over support columns in this place of really entertainment where the Midianites, I shouldn't have said that. It's the Philistines, thank you. Were there to mock him. And it says that he did, and he killed more of those Philistines in his death than all the killing that he had done there in his life. And I could put it this way. He really did more for God with his last breath than he had done for the rest of his life. Here's what I learned from Samson. There's a lot of lessons to be learned, and each one of these could be an entire series. But Samson finally made himself available to God. See, God had given him great ability, and the whole time he was waiting for Samson's availability. Now, I don't know what kind of talent God might have given you. Some of you I know are incredibly musically talented. Some of you are able to write or draw. Some of you might be able to speak or whatever it might be. God's given you a talent and an ability. Maybe you're a people person. You're just able to strike up conversations with people. Maybe you're good at sales or you're good at fixing things. Whatever it is, I'm telling you, God has gifted so many different people in so many different ways, and as many different people as we have here, we have different gifts and abilities. When I say gifts, I'm not talking about spiritual gifts. I'm just saying proclivities, things that you are good at. Some people ride on that. Some people are really good on academics. They're intelligent, and they can just coast. Some people have struggle, but whatever it might be, I'm just saying God is less concerned with the abilities that he's given to you until he has availability into your heart. Now, the truth is, whatever gifts and abilities you have, he wants you to hone it. He wants you to get better at it. He wants you to use it for his glory. And if we have time, we're going to get to that last person. That's really, but the idea is this. If Samson would have made himself available to the Lord long before he had his eyes put out and had to have somebody show him where the stanchions are for the building, think about what he could have accomplished for God. And he was strong his whole life. But he only made himself available at the very end of his life. That's a waste. That's a travesty. Don't let that be the hallmark of your life, to say, listen, I knew all about God and I could have done all this for him, but now that I'm 90, I'm going to start living for the Lord. Now listen, I'd rather you come back at 90 than never. But I'm talking to a room full of people that have decades and decades to serve the Lord. Make yourself available now and let him use you until he comes back and takes us all home. All right, who's next on the list? Jephthah? Oh, I skipped Barak. I skipped one. Barak. What do you know about Barak? God promised him that he was going to win. How would you like that kind of promise? That's a great promise. He says, go to war, and you're going to win. He has to fight Sisera. Sisera is he's tough. He's got an army, and But God says that I'm going to embarrass Sisera. I'm going to make a mockery of him. And so, Barak, I want you to go, but I'm going to have a woman kill this man. And you know the story, maybe. Sisera is running away. He runs into a tent, and the lady says, here, has some warm milk and a steak to the head, right? Bam. And that's how Sisera dies. But Barak, who's Barak? I mean, kind of when I talk about Gideon, everybody kind of knows the story of Gideon and Samson. Everybody, lost little boys with a picture Bible, know who Samson is. But Barak, I might have been a junior in Bible college before. No, I wasn't. But I'm just saying, nobody really knows the story of Barak. But yet, God knew where he was, and God used him. I'm not spending a lot of time on Barak, but the lesson I learned from that is you don't have to have notoriety or celebrity to serve the Lord. I don't know why people get more excited about some football player that makes a profession of faith than somebody that walks through the back door of their church and comes in and gets saved. I don't understand that. We ought to get excited every time somebody gets born again. And because somebody has a more of a platform doesn't mean that God's going to use them more just because they have celebrity. God can use you in amazing ways if you let him, even if you don't have any kind of notoriety. He was kind of anonymous. The last one is Jephthah, is that right? Jephthah, he had a history kind of like Oliver Twist. He's kind of a street urchin, dirty, roaming. He was the product of an immoral relationship that his father had. Sent away from his family. Guess what? His mother didn't even want him. Kind of an orphan. He grows up. There's bad times. Now, these are all judges. Do you understand what a judge is back in that day? Because when I don't know about you, you read the word judge, and maybe you're thinking of Judge Judy or Judge Wapner. That's what I grew up on, all right? So you're going to have to forgive me on that. But these judges were not the dignified people that you might think of like the Supreme Court. If I could put a mental image into your mind, they're more like Wyatt Earp in the OK Corral, right? And so it would be their job to lead in the battle. I think Judges 2 verse 16 gives us kind of what they were told to do. They were told to basically protect Israel from those that were coming in and raiding them. So they were defenders. Yeah, they had to judge. I think they did take the role of judgment, but they were much more than that. It wasn't just sitting on a bench saying, you do this and you do that. It says, okay, this is the judgment. Now, by the way, this is what God has said we're going to do. Let's go do it. And they lead them into war. They were rough and tumble characters. They were rough around the edges. It wasn't some refined judge in a black robe. And so Jephthah was probably rougher than the rest of them. He'd grown up and rough. And so when the attacks came and God says, we need a man to lead us, everybody raised their hand and said, not me, not me, not me. But Jephthah had a reputation, didn't he? Jephthah had a reputation. He says, that he was a rough man. And so they came to him. Now, maybe they thought he was expendable. I don't know. But they went to him and they said, will you lead us? And he said, I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to do that. He didn't have a pedigree. He wasn't known a lot like Barak. But when I look at Jephthah, he offered his daughter. Isn't that what people talk about most? Was it a human sacrifice? Would God ever receive a human sacrifice? He didn't let Abraham sacrifice Isaac, and I don't believe he would have ever let Jephthah kill his daughter. I believe that the sacrifice that was given was to the temple service, and I don't have time to break that all down. I think I've preached on it before, but to me it's very clear. She mourned her virginity for 3 months, and then she went and served, meaning that she was never going to have a husband. She was going to serve. I said temple, but I believe it would have been the tabernacle, okay? But anyways, he didn't sacrifice. But from Jephthah, we look at somebody that's been rejected and yet was willing to do what God called him to do. Did he claim the glory for that? Did he say, listen to me, you make me your king, you're gonna obey me, you're gonna do the things that I tell you to do? No. He gave God the glory. He dedicated the victory to God, and that's why when his daughter came out, he sacrificed her to the service of the Lord. And so I believe that God is looking for some people that are willing to glorify him and not themselves. These people demonstrated faith, but they had some characteristics about them that I believe God is looking for in modern day believers today. Somebody that makes themselves available, not just able. Somebody that is willing to not care about the past or where they come from, but knowing that God can use them in the future. Willing to give God the glory rather than having everybody look at me when I do something. Well, do you see, these men were on this list not because they were something special, but they knew that God was. My friends, if we'll have the right view about ourselves and about God, if we will exercise our faith and trust him to use us for his glory and give him that glory, I have no doubt that God can use each and every one of us here tonight in an incredible, unusual way if we'll let him, if we'll let him. So I encourage you, when you read through this list, be amazed. Why isn't Nehemiah on that list? Why isn't some of the other Jeremiah I guess some of the contemporaries, Peter or somebody else, but these were men that God saw what no one else did and used them in an unusual way as they trusted his plan for their life.